This is the Cybersecurity Amplified and Intensified Podcast. What's on the docket for today, sir?
I think what we were wanting to talk about was diving into what every company should be utilizing internally and or asking their partners if they're utilizing to make sure their business is more secure.
I'm good with that. Did you want to kick it off?
Sure. A lot of the stuff that we've been seeing over the past couple of weeks, you may see some insight on it, but one of the biggest things we always see with account takeovers, domain takeovers that are no longer or have never used 2FA at all. Have you been seeing a lot of that on your side or?
On the consulting side, not on the managed services side, but wherever there's pushback from the clientele to actually have multi-factor in play, those are the ones that are usually the low-hanging fruit for all these ransomware gangs. Because it all starts with a breach credential, right?
Exactly. And as more and more consultants, MSPs, IT vendors, just the internal IT themselves are, you know, looking at Microsoft and G Suite as their single source identity, I'm personally seeing a lot of people not leveraging 2FA or MFA on these tenants at all. So it's really that single point of entry. People are coming in, being able to compromise that specific identity and to be able to take over the entire network, literally just by that single point of identity, which is really, really shocking to me because I'm going to build a big wall around my house and I'm going to leave a two foot wide barrier hole here. So anybody who can find it, just come on in. No big deal.
Now, do you think that's a lack of education on both the provider's part as well as the provider's ability to explain that need to the client? Because the way I see it is on the managed services side, at least, you know, the way you and I do it, they don't have a choice. Come on board with us. There are maybe 15 or 16 different tasks that will occur within the first day, maybe two, to take them to what we would call our security baseline. Whereas many other providers, they want to upsell everything. It's like, hey, you're paying us nothing to come in, but maybe you should do this and it's going to cost you that. And the customer, and rightfully so, that's not what they were pitched. They're not going for the bait and switch, which in this case may actually protect them.
Well, see, I see a lot of it where, you know, kind of like what you're saying, they are going in and they're trying to upsell or mandate their clients be under a certain regulatory body or, you know, policy or procedure, but they don't do it themselves. You know, they go in there and it's like, okay, you're going to do all these things. And by the way, we're not holding ourselves to the same standards. You got to suffer with security, but we can't go through that. We got too much crap to do that thing. And it really is alarming to the point where I'm just like, why are you going to make all these recommendations to companies and, you know, say that you got to do 2FA, you got to do MFA, whatever the facet is, and you're not even doing it yourself. The whole cotton pot and kettle type of thing. So it really, really is kind of goofy. And I think we need to take a moment. And I really do think this is going to become a multi-part thing because I know we had a list of things that we want to go down and really talk about, you know, things that we really think companies should do. But I don't think we have all day to sit here and just talk about this. But I do think we need to take a moment and really dive in and say, all 2FA is considered the same.
Are you telling me that text message-based MFA is not good? Is that what you're telling me?
This is exactly where I was getting ready to go. You know, I mean, text message, SMS, you know, 2FA is not a secure approach. I have literally gone to vendors of an MSP and brute forced in with Google Authenticator. We've done it with Microsoft Authenticator. Not to say there's a problem with Microsoft or Google Auth. You know, it is a randomly generated code. It's how the developers implement that code into the program a lot of times. So, you know, they will come in and say, oh, well, we are leveraging Google Auth for our TOTP codes. Okay. But how far down that rabbit hole are you going? Are you saying two or three failed code enters and now your account is locked out for 5 minutes? So some jack wagon like me who has now a username and password, I'm loading it up into one of my tools like Burp Suite or Python or whatever. And I'm just randomly generating codes until I get in. I mean, come on. So, I mean, there's always got to be that extra layer of, you know, security that you're putting onto it. And I think we're really going to come up with a new name of, instead of the layers of security being the layers of an onion, we come up with something different. I don't know. What do you think, Shiller?
Definitely rename it is good for me. Are you familiar with Keeper Security, the password manager?
Yes, I keep going back and forth thinking about them versus LastPass, but go ahead. What's your question?
About 6 months ago, they redid their authority platform, and now it's username, MFA, and then if you succeed with that challenge, then you'll have the ability to put your password in. And you get locked out after 3 or 5 failed attempts for whatever you set that threshold to be, whether it's 5 minutes up to 2 or 3 hours. What do you think about putting the MFA challenge in between the username and password?
Now, are they locking you out on the MFA challenge or after you get past MFA and locking you out on the password?
Either or, whichever comes first.
Okay.
Nice, right?
All right. Let's go down those rabbit holes. So this is a massive onus issue. I'll go for that first. I can take a directory and list attack with a bunch of email addresses, and I can start figuring out who your clientele is because, you know, if the email address matches your database, okay, I'm going to get prompted for an TOTP code, right?
Do you really need to go that far down the rabbit hole, or do you just go on LinkedIn or any social media platform where people willingly give up all their information?
Well, we won't talk about that just yet, okay? But there are plenty of IT folks so that will really divulge what their entire stack is and what they're using, which, please, if you're in IT, please stop doing this. Stop telling everybody the tools you use. But anyway.
Does that mean we don't list all of our tools and partners on our website so that—
Yes, please stop that.
You can just give everyone the vectors they need?
Yeah, please stop listing your partners. I mean, if I know you're using SentinelOne as one of your partners, every month or 2 months, there is a hackathon, literally, I mean, it's still virtual, but there's still hackathons about bypassing AV detection. So if you're listing that you're a partner with SentinelOne or Cylance or Bitdefender or whatever, and you're listing like your big prominent customers that you're very happy about having, then I kind of know what your stack is. I know what the vector is to start breaching those possible clients. Please stop doing it. But anyway, we'll get back to Keeper.
Yes, sir.
Because you know me, I'll go all squirrel on you. What is the point of having a password really at this moment? So if I dictionary tag and I say, okay, here's a list of all the email addresses. Now, if you're able to put a account lockout on the TOTP code, what's the point of the password anymore, really? And at that point, wouldn't you just want to do SSO and then challenge with the TOTP code?
They do that too. Now, the way I have mine set up for all you onus people listening in, we're SSOing in. And the way I have my MFA set up, you can't save the session. So if you have to log in again, you are challenged. And that is my preference for MFA. I think there needs to be more MFA challenges in all the software we use as providers. I know there are massive user experience issues that you will incur, but I think it's a small price to pay for the added security.
Here comes the other flip side of the coin. If you have TOTP codes that you have to put in, granted, it's going to be a pain. If you go with something like a push notification system, which I think Keeper has, and I know LastPass does not, but Duo Security has, but if you go with a push notification system, I think a lot of people are going to get complacent about, yes, it's me, just how it should be done. And it's really going to, you know, circumvent the entire reason for having it. So I'm really torn on that.
When you're dealing with Duo, I mean, we both use it internally. We both roll it out to our clients. You can almost set up something similar to conditional access and trusted endpoints to make sure they can only log in and authenticate from those places. And believe it or not, Duo is actually pretty savvy to identify if you just authenticated on one IP and now you're halfway around the world. They won't even send the challenge. So if you're using Duo, I think that should be, in my opinion, I think Duo should be the baseline for MFA across every workload or something similar to that. Because they're
now not
sponsored.
That is a good idea when you are in a traditional workload, if you will, so a traditional office space. But you know, as you know, you and I have talked more and more offline, you know, there's a ton of people who are going to be migrating or are still migrating and plan to maybe even permanently stay in this whole mobile workforce. So listing every DHCP IP address from every end user without a static IP address can be an administrative nightmare versus forcing everybody to get a business account and a static IP address.
One of the ways you can mitigate that is if you're using Microsoft 365, get their business premium license, tack it onto the user, and really begin to leverage device management. Tie that in with conditional access policies to bring Duo MFA into the Azure AD space, where you're not just you're no longer using the Microsoft Authenticator, you're layering Duo on there. So now, feasibly, they'd have to compromise your Azure AD credentials as well as Duo to get in somewhere. What do you think about that?
I don't know. I'd have to really look into it more because on the surface, I'm a little complex by it. So, let's just say hypothetically, I was traveling like sometimes I do. And let's say I'm traveling abroad. I'm in Italy, I'm in France, I'm in Australia, whatever. I want to log in. Okay, I have conditional accessing turned on. Let's just say for the state, but I have Duo turned on as well. So if I'm able to authenticate against Azure, but not able to authenticate against Duo to be able to actually log in, it could cause some problems, especially for some traveling and stuff like that. I guess a lot of foresight, a lot of planning, which isn't a bad thing, but I definitely think it's something that needs to be looked into a little bit more in case-by-case scenario.
The good thing about Duo in that sense is that you can actually create incident response plans around that. And remember, an IRP is not just for a ransomware attack or something like that. An IRP can be for something where an executive is traveling and you need a plan to get them back online.
Oh, come on. Now you're going to hurt my feelings. It's not only for ransomware. Come on.
Well, I know that's your thing, but they can probably be used here and there. Maybe. I'm sure there were IRPs long before there was ransomware.
Oh, I'm sure.
I had a question.
Sure.
First one, you were referring to IRPs, right?
Yes, sir.
I don't know if I heard you right or not. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. And then, I deal with like five or six different of those things for my organization. Pain in the butts. Once a year, got a test. In reference to the 2FA, you guys are referring to, really for, very valuable apps. You're talking about, system administrators, 2FA. You're not talking about your average just user 2FA option. You're talking about it on the enterprise level.
I have
I'll take this one.
Oh, okay. Go for it, Eric.
So here you go. Everybody needs 2FA. You're saying it's only on C-level or that. I literally had a physical pen test where the owners were more concerned that I got into the desktop of a user that had passwords and salaries for the entire organization. And they were actually probably arguably more concerned that the salaries for everybody in an Excel spreadsheet was available on the network from this one user workstation, that they like didn't care about, I can take down your entire 365 tenant, literally shut down your company from the outside. They were literally more worried about their salaries. It was crazy. Everybody needs to have 2FA, as much as I hate to say it, but I think even if you are in a Microsoft tenant and you have a mobile workforce and you're using F1 or the frontline workers, those guys need to be 2FA too as well. You need to protect the identity and all identities within inside of an organization. And with that, go ahead, Mr. Schiller.
I am a firm believer that there's not a single resource in a company that is more valuable than another. And especially in terms of MFA, you should offer the same level of protection that you would if you had company secrets, patents, intellectual property that you wanted to protect. That's the same thing, because anyone and anything can be a vector. You get enough of those, as Eric knows, you string them together, you can own an organization very quickly. Nacho, my question for you, how do you distinguish between what you would put that extra layer of MFA on and the average user, as you said?
Well, because you guys are talking about, and that's what I was trying to allude to, that you are 100% correct on an enterprise level, because anything, getting into an average user in an enterprise, you can work your way up and get to where you want to go. Yes, you are right on that. Home user, yes, 2FA for everybody. That is agreeable. The level of difference, say, you got a system administrator, he's going to have a YubiKey with him, because obviously, he has the keys to the kingdom. But yes, I agree with you guys.
Nacho, you're starting to bring into a very interesting discussion that we have talked into. While you haven't said it directly, I'm going to make that segue for you a little bit and take a little bit of liberty here. But, you have said, you're pretty much saying, even on the home user, you need to protect the identity. The identity is the email address. So by leveraging that, you got to make sure that that identity at all times has the most secure 2FA, MFA, whatever that email provider will allow you to have. You need to have that in place, because that is your central point of contact. But on one thing that you did say, which I will disagree with you, you're saying that 2FA MFA needs to be done on the enterprise level. And I think it's a lot more granular than that. It really depends, I believe, in my personal two cents. I know Mia Schibel will bounce back and forth about this a lot, and there's a lot to be said either way. So I'm not saying one way is right or wrong, but, you know, a five-person quick loop place, I could see the owner, the manager, being the only people that need 2FA, MFA. You take that same size company and slap them as a legal firm where the front desk person and the paralegal probably sees more information than that lawyer ever does. And any given day, everybody needs to be in MFA, 2FA, whatever the case is. You know, I really think it does go down to the business a little bit versus just everybody. But, you know, I'm kind of spraying a broad approach, but I do think it needs to be a lot more granular than just say, you're an enterprise, you must do this. I'm more on Shiva's side of, you know, everybody needs to have it, but I do have some tolerance and caveats like, okay, this business really doesn't need that, all that, you know, but, you know, that's, I don't know. I can go back and forth all day on that one, really play with my mind a lot on it.
With what we've said about MFA, how do you guys see SSO and conditional access playing in tandem with MFA? Do you think that's a necessity for the identity or something that's nice to have?
You know, I'm really, really torn. And this really goes back to a lot of the conversations we've had both here and off of here is SSO is awesome, right? Because you really do have that identity that you're going to. But I am also a huge advocate of layers of separation as well. Take, for instance, your bank account. In no way, shape, or form, at least I would hope, you would never want SSO into your bank from your 365 or G Suite tenant. But you want to have some sort of 2FA, MFA on there that's not text-based. You know, so having that level of separation, I do think has a lot of merit. Should we SSO everything? In my opinion, no. Would it be nice? Yeah. But again, I do think we have to have that level of separation.
What do you think about the CFO and that CFO's department in a company having SSO access to their banking information? They fire someone. You and I both know documentation in most of these companies is poor at best. What's the likelihood that upon termination, they will forget to disconnect or disable certain accounts? And couldn't SSO help with something like that?
Yeah, I believe SSO could help with that. But I do think that goes back to some of the original discussion of having an incident response plan. You know, this is a termination is an incident. How are you going to respond to it? You know, Nacho made comments a minute ago about having just a couple of incidents that he has to go through every year. I'd really hope it's more than a dozen because, I mean, even in our world, we go through what's called atomic red teaming and, you know, we're always coming up with new incidents to apply it against to see how your business stands up to these type of threats. But yeah, I mean, any of these things need to have standard operating procedures, an incident response plan, whatever term you want to use, it needs to have that. And like I said, we can really go back and forth all day about, you know, if for some reason, let's say hypothetically, we'll take you for an example or myself. Let's say hypothetically, for some reason, something got goofed up and our MFA or 2FA got accidentally disabled. You know, whether our own scenario or something with our identity provider, 365, G Suite, Duo, whoever it is, there was a goof up and the stars didn't align and someone was able to break in and now has access to everything because they SSO'd into you without 2FA or its MFA. You know, having total keys to the kingdom, awesome with an identity, but it's also very dangerous.
I definitely agree. It's one shot, many kills in that sense, when you look at it that way. But at the same time, I think there's a tremendous amount of time that can be saved with having to disable one set of credentials across multiple workloads, especially if you're going through a breach. Say employee number 35 got breached and you can't narrow down the vector of attack, but you know it's that user. And if you don't have SSO, how many systems is an enterprise going to have to disable to get to that? And that's where I think the SSO does help. For the more privileged users, maybe that's where you layer on a YubiKey as a backup for MFA authentication, whether it's on a local authentication or SSO. That would be a case-by-case scenario. I don't think we can generalize there, but I have a question for you, Nacho. What would you say if I told you I have a 15-person plumbing company that has SSO, Duo MFA, and the identical protections I provide for a hedge fund?
Yes, that is fine if you're able to provide it and they are able to implement it on their budget, because your hedge fund's obviously going to have a little higher budget. I might argue like his plumber's making pretty good money, but you know, implement. So yes, it's very doable. But the only thing that I consider is when I do meet with my small clients, I just work within their budget, go ahead and implement stuff. But that doesn't mean that I can't provide them added security in reference to be able to access it in 2FA in additional method. What you and I know that we may well have problems with is certain users who prefer not, and it would be, I mean, we're talking about, you know, CEOs and stuff like that. We're not talking about, you know, system administrators, but the people up there of a certain age that do not like to hassle with 2FA. And that's where I try my best to make sure that whomever is in charge of making policies that enforces that.
So Nacho, what would you be, or would you be of a mindset potentially to start entertaining? It's like, okay, if you are not willing to have 2FA or MFA, whatever your standard is, then you have limited access. You know, we've actually had some pretty good success after being educated by another security firm that was actually their idea. It's like, okay, if you have a minimum password of 8 characters, then you're required to re-authenticate every 6 hours. However, if you're willing to do a bit better password and you're able to do 2FA or like an actual MFA, and you're actually able to use passphrases, then maybe you're able to work an entire day or 2 days. So by adopting, you know, I'm kind of spitballing off the top of my head. I don't know exactly what it is, but, you know, spitballing the whole idea of, you know, if you're not willing to implement security, your access to resources are restricted. You know, much like a DOD type of thing, you know, the higher your security clearance is, the more access to resources and information that you have. I think that may be a good alternative for a lot of the C-level people who are, you know, really reluctant to do it. It could be, you know, just spitballing now that I say this, this could actually be a good thing by actually implementing this, because now most of those baby boomers are looking at retirement, and this may help them transition a lot of their roles off to some of the younger folks who aren't so opposed to all the security stuff and willing to adopt it. Maybe it will help some of that transition. What do you gentlemen think of that?
I like it. I like any type of controlled access, but I'm also of the mindset, give them the SSO, give them the MFA, and now add that added layer of challenges for re-authentication. Because I don't think we as a country, we as an industry in the United States is ready for or equipped to deal with a further increase in cyber attacks. We're too laissez-faire with everything, and it's not going to work in the long term.
Yeah, I mean, just speaking of cyber attacks, I've got 3 potential ransomware leads just today, and 1 PCI compliance possible breach that we've got a lead on today. So there's no shortage of work out there in the security industry, and it's going to just get worse, because every 2 weeks you see where there's a shortage of security folks. People don't want to get secure.
My issue with people not wanting to get secure is that IT providers are inherently afraid to tell people what security actually costs, because they're afraid they're not going to get the job. Most IT providers are afraid to walk away from a potential contract, so they let the client run roughshod over them as much as they can.
Hello, my name is James. It's not people. It's not about people not wanting to be secure. It's about people not knowing what threats are lying around, and they only look at their pockets at the moment. But they don't know that if they don't secure their systems at this point, they will even lose more money.
Okay, James, I'll push back on you. You know, here's trying to get a little ugly. How in the world does somebody at this day and age not know you got to be more secure and asking these questions? When you even have social media, Twitter, LinkedIn, Facebook, all these platforms that are constantly getting their accounts compromised and hacked, and they see it on not only their feed or, you know, friends of friends' feeds that, oh, hey, if I sent you a message, excuse me, I got hacked. There's no excuse at all. There's no excuse at all.
You're totally right about that. And that's the problem where it's going. People in those companies, they think that they need a lot of knowledge to secure the systems. But that's not the point. You can buy people that do that for you. Solutions that work.
I have a thought on
absolutely.
This.
Yeah, absolutely. Being able to leverage a solution provider, a security, or not even security, but you know, a consulting firm.
I think this goes back to the provider. If the provider is not posing the correct solution to the client will always take the lowest cost option. they are not going to go spend more money when the expert is telling them they don't have to. Am I wrong?
No, you're totally right. Why spend more money than you have to?
Well, it's
but you're right, Shiva. I mean, when someone, you know, if you're relying on your IT company, which is basically an advisor to you to advise you on what to do, and the company is advising you based on cost, you're absolutely right, because you can only see, you're not the professional. You're listening to what your IT tech is giving you. But also consider that sometimes a lot of these IT tech individuals or organizations may not have a cyber arm to them and may not understand the threat, even if, because it's something like they don't understand, so they can't provide input on it unless they have a cyber component to their organization that can provide insight and allow the client to determine what they're willing to go ahead and invest in to protect their assets.
With the state of cybersecurity, or lack thereof, on this side of the pond, at least in the US, I don't think you need a cybersecurity firm to tell you should leverage controlled access, MFA, and a minimum baseline of security. I think cybersecurity in this day and age needs to transition to the SOC and SIM side of the house for offensive threat hunting and defense. I think the average IT person should be able to implement an IDP. They should be able to implement a solid MFA platform, email protection, and such like that, because I think those are the basics of what's needed.
Yeah, but can that average IT person explain why properly?
Well, we need better people. The world needs ditch diggers too, right? If they can't hack it properly, they got to move verticals. I know that might be a bit harsh, but at the same time, you're leaving people exposed.
Probably why they won't give them the information, because they may not have the knowledge to provide the information or support it. And if they can, they'll go vertical and they'll lose a client, or they'll lose that portion of the client to someone that actually has a cyber section in their department or in their company, you know, that can provide correct information. But the client would never know without asking. That's the issue.
Well, no, it goes a lot more deeper than that, Nacho, because my company is a cybersecurity firm. So we go into these things. We're trying to figure out, a lot of IT folks and MSPs are extremely, extremely cautious and threatened by us, because we are the unknown people that's going to come in and just destroy everything that they've been building, even though it may or may not be completely right and or wrong. You know, these folks are coming, they have this mindset that these security guys are going to come in and they're going to get me fired. They're going to do this, they're going to do that. And granted, I know a handful of cybersecurity firms that are out there that just don't care, you know, set the whole village on fire. They don't, you know, when you got companies like mine and some other ones that are out there that actually care and they want to make things better, you know, you just got to have the right conversations with people and stop being afraid to have them. You know, maybe I went off a little left track there, but you got to stop this mentality. You really do, folks.
Eric, I'm coming into companies that, you know, have had issues, and they'll call me out of the blue. They're like, you know, we heard about here, blah, blah, blah. Can you come in and check out what happened? And I walk in, and yes, I tell them, look, you don't need your IT support contract this, you know, take them out for this. You don't need this. You don't need that. You don't need this, because they're getting sold a bill of goods. So I get rid of, you know, I get rid of about 80 to 90% of the services with that IT company that was selling them stuff they never even knew. Or, you know, you have, I forget it, just a bunch of stuff that they didn't need. And I do form relationships with local IT support people, because, you know, just as a fan, they're like, well, who the hell do we go to call? Yeah, I'm in an isolated area where the next cyber person or individual that does cyber or has any knowledge of it is 150 miles away in every single direction. So yes, I maintain relationships with these companies to try to help them out with such issues. But there are sometimes that, you know, I bump into some that are trying to do stuff a little over. The company doesn't need that, and I just help them determine that you can reduce your cost by doing it. And yes, it hurts the tech company because it's reducing cost. And I will admit that I've done that.
Yeah, and see, I mean, I'm going to be a little blunt. You know me by now, but freaking stop doing that. You know, you need to have a different conversation with these folks, you know, and this is exactly why the industry does not communicate at all, and you are part of the problem. You're going literally in your own words saying, you don't need this, you don't need this, you don't need this, this is all crap, blah, blah, blah. Instead of taking, I'm one of these guys. I mean, you guys, I know I'm rough around the edges and I'll call a horse, I don't care. But when you're going into these situations, you've got to be able to build a better rapport. You got to build, you can't be the, I'm going to come in here and whack everybody off. And like I said, set the freaking village on fire. You've got to come in, it's like, okay, I understand these guys are doing this, this, and this, and this, and this, but there's a better way of doing it because of my experience. Let's talk about this, 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 and this, and let me show you how this is a better reason of doing it, because we are an incident response firm. We have to have these conversations all the time. You can't go in and just bruise a bunch of egos and then expect crap to get done. You've got to be more finessed. You've got to have more of a patience. You got to have more of an understanding. You know, not everybody knows the crap that I know. And again, I'm no big freaking god when it comes to this stuff either. I know a whole lot about very little. There are people that are doing memory forensics and they're doing just all kinds of stuff that just blow my freaking mind. I'm like, you guys are gods. You know what I mean? But so I'm not trying to say, I'm the end all be all of cybersecurity by any means, but you got to have a more brotherhood approach, and you're part of the problem, Nacho. I'm sorry, but you are. When you're going in and like I said, you're taking that mentality against people, you're not helping the overall cause. You're hurting it. Please stop that.
How many times have either one of you gone into a situation, seen what the client is being billed for, but those are services the client will never see because it's on the IT provider or in-house IT to use or leverage?
Yep, all the time.
And we can go in and say, well, if you're not using this as a user, you don't need it. That could very well be the thing that's keeping the ship together. So we need a more holistic approach and consultative approach to go in and say, hey, we see you have this. How's it being used? You don't know? Let's find out. Okay, maybe we can do this better. Or maybe we can do it differently, as Eric was saying. I think that is really the way you have to be, because it's a small world. And we only get better by making everyone else better.
I agree. And Eric, thank you for being 100% honest. Hey, man, I take as much constructive criticism as I can. It's always a learning process. That's good. You're right. I mean, our job is to go ahead and try to unite and have an acceptance of our skill set to the IT group. And you are 100% right on that. And it's true.
Definitely you taking the time and, like I said, really sitting back and say, look, you need to take a more kumbaya moment, if you will, and just have these conversations with folks. And instead of being all harsh and everything, I mean, I'm a Marine. It's in my blood, right? It doesn't do anybody any good. Even let's just say hypothetically, anybody on here is an MSP or an IT vendor, you're getting a new client. How many more times is that that handoff and a transfer of knowledge 1,000 times better by just going in and being pleasant versus going in and being, the world's on fire type of situation, right? Thanks everybody for coming. Really enjoyed it. Sorry we didn't get everything covered that we want to, but we'll try again on Wednesday.
Thanks. Thanks again for joining us for the Cybersecurity Amplified and Intensified podcast.